and just left it so the gates open out there.
Oh, he's going to be late because, yeah.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular meeting for Tuesday, December 13th, 2016. The time right now is 7:02 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cuddeback, Hanford, Davis, Camp, and Gamble.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen last week had mentioned that he'd be 30 to 45 minutes late this evening, so we will expect him to come in around 7:30 to 7:45, and I'll make a note on the agenda when he comes in. Councilmember Camp, will you please lead us in the pledge?
Sir.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Our first item on the agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is the confirmation of reappointments and appointments to our various boards and commissions. And before we move into this, I just want to take a moment to thank all of our boards and commission members. You all work as volunteers in our community. You advise me, you advise our staff, and you advise the council. You make it possible for us to deliver really excellent services to our citizens, and I thank all of you that are out there for the fine work that you do. I think there's still cupcakes out there, so as you leave, please grab one. I don't need another cupcake this evening myself. Council members, would you like to say a few words to our boards and commissioners? Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I just want to echo what you said. We very much appreciate all the work that is done and the research that's done and the input and everything that you give to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to echo that. I know what it's like to work on the at least one commission with the Planning Commission and the deep dives that you do at that level to give us the information so we can make effective decisions up here. Sometimes it's really a less than thankful task, but we really appreciate your hard work, and we'll hope that you'll continue. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on to the item on the agenda under announcements and presentations. You'll see there, first, one of the things that I do is I try to get all of the positions filled right around this time of the year. Most of the positions expire December 31st, and so I try to bring to you everybody at once so that we're not doing a lot of onesies and twosies unless we've got people leaving mid-year. So you'll see in here that we've got, under the Civil Service Commission, one commissioner whose term has ended, and that is Commissioner Knadel, and we'll recognize him here momentarily. He has served for about 12 years on the Civil Service Commission. He was brought in under Mayor Holman and has outlasted three or four mayors at this point. In the game of Survivor, winning. On the Ethics Board, you have we have two board members' terms who are ending in 2016. Mr. Chris Johnson confirmed interest in serving another term, filling one vacancy in the Ethics Board. The regular term of office for the members of the Ethics Board are 3 years, and Mr. Johnson's term of appointment will be January 1st, 2017 through the December 31st of 2019 if you confirm the reappointment. On the Parks Board, we have one member whose term is ending in 2016. Mr. James Yap confirmed interest in serving another term. You confirmed his appointment about two months ago. So he was serving in a unexpired term. So his name is before you this evening for your consideration for confirmation. So Mr. Yap's term of appointment would be January 1st, 2017 through December 31st of 2020. Also, the school district's representative term has ended, and he's expressed an interest in continuing to serve in that position. So his term would also be January 1st of 2017 through December 31st of 2018. On Planning Commission, there are three commissioner terms that are ending in 2016. Those are Mr. Jay Bull, Ms. Diane Dirksen, and Mr. Steve Jensen. They've all confirmed interest in continuing to serve, so I am asking your confirmation of them as well. All three of them would serve terms that they would be appointed for on January 1st of 2017, and they would serve through December 31st of 2020. On the Salary Commission, we have two commissioners' terms that are ending in 2016. Both Ms. Sellers and also Mr. Van Kirk have confirmed an interest in continuing to serve, filling both of the vacant positions. The regular term of office for the members of the Salary Commission are 3 years, and Ms. Sellers and Mr. Van Kirk's terms would both begin on January 1st for their reappointment and serve through December 31st of 2019. On the Civil Service Commission, we do have one vacancy, and I missed that when I was reading that. And for that one vacancy, to replace Mr. Knadel is Ms. Erin Angus-Snapka to serve in that position, and her appointment would begin December 13th of 2016 and run through December 31st of 2022. So I am looking for council's confirmation of those appointments. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Erin Angus-Snapka to the Civil Services Commission and reappointments of Chris Johnson to the Ethics Board, James Yap and Devlin Piplik to the Parks Board, W.J. Bull Jr., Diane Dirksen and Steve Jensen to the Planning Commission, and David Van Kirk and Ashley Sellers to the Salary Commission.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Gamble for the requested action as written in Agenda Bill Number 16177. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah.
And
thank
congratulations
you.
To everybody that's been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, what I'm going to do is go ahead and present to Mr. Knadel first, and then like that he can leave, and since he's not going to be sworn in with about eight people.
Whoever's here.
Okay. So, Mr. Knadel, again, you've served for about 12 years.
Yes,
you've
sir.
Outlasted three mayors. Congratulations. We really appreciate your service, and we've got a certificate for you. The council members and I will come on down and present this to you.
And you'll probably have a photograph taken today. Never miss a photograph. So on behalf of the Greenwood community, Mr. Knadel, Commissioner Knadel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank
I appreciate
you.
Your service.
Thank you, everybody. This has been an honor serving.
Thank you. Okay, now our clerk, Ms. Smoot, will go ahead and call people up to take the oath of office.
Erin Angus-Snapka, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of Civil Services Commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
Erin?
I should remember this by now.
Thank you.
Thompson for the ethics board. Chris Johnson, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Washington and ordinances of the city of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of ethics board member according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I do so swear.
Wayne J. Bolt here?
Yes.
Then we'll go on to Diane Dirksen here. Steve Jensen. Okay. Ashley Sellers.
We can just leave it
Ashley Sellers, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Washington and the ordinances of the city of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of a salary commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
Yay.
David Van Kirk, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Washington and ordinances of the city of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of salary commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I swear.
Congratulations.
I was going to give one more applause.
Let's do it. Thank you again, everybody. All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is a presentation on State Route 522 from Mr. White from the Department of Transportation. Mr. White. Thank you so much for coming, and this is a very important item for our community. I really appreciate you coming out this evening to share the status.
Thank you for having me.
The harassment.
The
Chicken. Are you trying to touch the screen?
That was when you modern day of the bangle thing.
No. I've done that a couple of times where I reach, it's like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
What's that?
Councilmember Scarborough, if you'd like, we've got a space over here you could sit at.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council, for having me here to speak to you tonight. We've been working on some planning efforts with the stakeholders in the corridor here, and here to give an update on some of those activities. At the outset, I'll say I have a lot of content in this, and I did that intentionally. I'm going to breeze over a number of things in here pretty quick, but I wanted to leave copies of this for you to kind of peruse afterwards and may follow up with questions if there are any. So I've erred on the side of having more than less. So again, I wanted to go over some of the work we've been doing with the funding we got in the 2016 supplemental budget to do some planning efforts, talk a little bit about the traffic condition updates that we've done, and some of the capital projects and concepts we've looked at here that could provide some possibility here as we move forward pursuing funding to complete the improvements within the SR 522 corridor. So a little bit about the funding that we have in hand. This shows work that's been completed in the corridor and work that is yet to be completed. Probably very well known to everyone here, the missing links in this corridor are shown in gray, and that's the improvements to the Paradise Lake Road interchange, the widening from Paradise Lake Road to Echo Falls Lake Road, finishing Echo Falls Lake Road interchange, and then widening from there to the Snohomish River. So that's what's left. That's what's out there remaining within almost, around $200 million of investment in the corridor. Connecting Washington, which the legislature approved in 2015, provided $10 million, but as you're probably also aware, the money's out pretty far in the distance in that program, so it's about 10 years out, and that's part of the challenge here and how we address the existing conditions when the limited funds we have are quite a ways out. Previous estimates for Paradise Lake were at a little over $104 million to complete that work at the interchange, and the remaining widening was at $76 million. I'm going to provide some updates on those things tonight. I'm not going to go into this in detail. The supplemental transportation budget provided some prioritization to the 522 corridor within what's called the Corridor Sketch Program. That's WSDOT's planning initiative that is working with the local governments and the MPOs to do a better job at integrating our planning and the local government's planning at a county and city level. And so that's what funded this work we've been doing. Unfortunately, the funding we had from this is very, very minimal. Essentially, it was parceled out at $3,000 a corridor for, I don't know if you can see on there, there's, I think somewhere in there, there's hundreds of corridors in the state that this $1 million is going to. So Northwest Region has contributed some funds to this, trying to get the maximum value out of this planning effort. The existing conditions today, we updated those as part of this effort. No surprise, the AM is a westbound, highly congested condition through the corridor. One thing I would point out of note is, and this is a theme here tonight, is figuring out the connection to 405 and getting people to and from 405 more efficiently has got to be part of the ultimate solution. If you've been tracking the 405 corridor program planning, they have been looking at direct connectors, and as they're bringing in revenue and they combine that with connecting Washington money they have, that may be something that's achievable here as we are looking forward, but it becomes a critical factor for the commuters using this corridor. PM is the reverse. It's highly congested, as you can see in the red there. Through the section that's unimproved to the Snohomish River Bridge, and again down 405 heading southbound. I've put this in here to just, this is maybe stating the obvious, but we did some planning efforts looking at, the users of 522, in particular Maltby and Monroe residents, and the vast majority of Monroe residents commute between 10 miles and up to 50 or even greater daily. So, you know, that is, you know, most Monroe residents are obviously commuting outward. This little graph is a companion to that one, and it shows that the majority of the residents in Monroe are commuting to the southwest and to whether it's Seattle, Bellevue, Bothell, it doesn't really matter. They're all, but they're heading in that direction again, west to 405 and then to the south and then reverse commute back later. We engaged community transit as part of this, talking to them about current service and what future possibilities might be out there. Current service is very limited. They have the 424, which has some AM, limited AM and PM service for those peak periods. Those buses, though, however, have to travel in that restricted one-lane direction section, just like everybody else, so they don't get what you call a transit advantage, which is a limiting factor in their service. Community Transit did say that there are possibilities for, and they're looking forward and they're planning for enhanced service. At the end of the day, that probably goes best paired with some kind of improvement where they can actually get some better efficiency through the corridor. But, it's something that they're open to talking about. Currently not funded, though, as they would say. As part of this effort, we had a number of planning meetings that led up to a workshop. A workshop involved key members from a number of different facets of the Monroe City government, Snohomish County, Community Transit. We had some bike and ped representation. Snohomish County Council members have been engaged in this, etc. And then a variety of technical experts. We looked at things like transportation demand management and transit and other things. But at the end of the day, right now, those aren't going to solve the pain and suffering of the current users on their own. They might go well paired with some other improvements. We looked at a variety of capital improvements. That's what's coming up next. And we used some travel time performance measurements to try to at least, it's probably what I call very cursory, early plane level traffic analysis and forecast. What we did was we used it as a way to compare the level of benefit we receive from different concepts. So at least we can have some kind of baseline to compare them against each other. The alternatives we looked at, there were some that we had identified working with the stakeholders, the city, the county, etc., and we identified in advance and that we did analysis on. We had a work, and that's these ones here, 1 through 6. I'm going to go through each of these individually. You'll see there's a number of peak shoulder segments, and so I'll kind of try to package those together a little bit. We had a new option come up during the workshop, a new idea. Somebody suggested, well, what about a reversible lane like we use on I-90 or you have in downtown Seattle? Would something like that work in this segment of the corridor? So we looked at that post-workshop. We looked at that a bit, and I'll speak to that tonight. And then we had a new idea come up, a new and maybe somewhat obvious idea, but regarding a phased approach to the widening that I'll speak to. So again, there's roughly 8 different concepts we looked at. A number of these can be patched together in different ways. I can speak to that a little bit. Some of them are really low cost, like the ramp meters at Echo Fails Lake. And others, as you will see as we go through this, start to get to be expensive enough that you question whether or not they make sense or whether you should just really pursue the ultimate widening. That said, one of the goals here was to try to find some things that cost less in case takes a while to come up with the full funding for the widening and improvements. At least there can be maybe a prioritized approach based on a lesser amount of funding. So I'm going to go through these in order of kind of smaller to larger. I can answer questions to the best of my ability here, and if you want to have some really detailed questions, I can follow up.
So, Mr. White, I have to go ahead and announce very briefly that Councilmember Rasmussen has just entered chambers, and with that said, go ahead and continue your presentation. Probably the best thing to do would be to just sort of pause and look at me at the end of going over each slide, and what I can do is I'll just go ahead and acknowledge anybody that might chime in.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Yep, thank you.
So the first idea, you know, we tried to identify some really low-cost things in case there was some opportunity to move some money around within Connecting Washington. And the first of that was ramp meters at Echo Fails Lake. And as I think people might be aware, Echo Fails Lake, there's a choke point there right after that interchange where things bottleneck down. And people use the frontage roads as a diversion route. So people cut around Paradise and bypass and then cut back into the corridor. That creates a variety of congestion problems, or it enhances the congestion. Ramp meters would be a low cost and relatively effective way probably to at least pace the traffic a little bit better. They would discourage some of the people that are diverging around and kind of, you know, cheating the system a little bit, maybe, depending on how you want to view it. And this would at least regulate that a little bit, would have some travel time savings. But again, it's not what I call a big picture solution. It's an incremental small help. And this could be paired with any number of these other things that are coming up after as I go through the rest of these ideas. So there's that one. I will mention that these costs, just the disclaimer on them, I have some information about assumptions and as we go on what some of the constraints or risks are with some of these. These are what you call planning or scoping level estimates, and they're in today dollars. So depending on when you were to build these things, if you were to build them in 2025, you know, you'd have some inflation that you'd incur, and these numbers would go up a bit if you were to build them out a number of years.
Councilmember Cutback?
Yes.
Go back. If you could just go back a slide.
You mentioned there would be time savings with this plan. What would that look like?
The travel time savings, I want to say that, and of course the way I constructed this thing, I brought the wrong printout with me. The slides that have the travel time savings are in the back part of this. I just kind of tucked them in the back so you'd have them.
Okay.
I want to say this one for the eastbound, I want to say it's more eastbound, and I want to say it was maybe up to 3 to 4 minutes, and that was traveling. We measured a trip from 405 to US 2, so we had to have a same trip to measure and compare these against for all of those. Actually, eastbound, it was, you know, it was somewhat noticeable for the level of the small amount of money. It was noticeable. It was less savings in the westbound direction. And you can go back. I sent Elizabeth the PDF of this, and you'll have this PowerPoint. You can go and verify, or if I got something a little bit off, you can verify the numbers in the materials.
Got one more. Councilmember Scarborough?
Sorry.
I guess I'm not clear on what you're trying to accomplish by putting meters on those two ramps. Are you trying to stop traffic from coming down Malby Road and instead of going over to Paradise Lake Road and getting on the highway, going U Way and getting on a Fails?
I think you're doing two things. You're regulating the cars entering the 522 traffic stream in a way. It's connected to traffic loops. So the loops are measuring the speed of the traffic and kind of judge how quickly you can enter new cars into that and keep people moving efficiently. So what you're doing here is you're keeping people flowing just a little bit more smoothly by regulating people's entrance to 522 rather than all just kind of streaming in all at once and then kind of jamming up. You also discourage a little bit of that kind of the what I'm calling diverging people you know, who are kind of going, maybe taking 522, getting off 522, taking the frontages and then front road and then getting back on. You're kind of discouraging that a little bit, you know, because they don't get maybe the same advantages a little bit. They get regulated a little more, so maybe they would just choose to stay on 522, which would be smoother overall operations if they chose to do that.
Okay.
Rather than trying to race around and then jam things back up right at the right after this interchange. So it's, you know, it's an idea, again.
Councilmember Gimbel?
And we call that the local loop. That's not bypassing, or that's for local use only. So I'm just kidding.
we all have in our communities the workarounds, and this is one of them. And it does contribute to some issues, though. The next one here is adding right turn pockets, dedicated right turn lanes at Paradise Lake Road, both eastbound and westbound, and constructing them in a way that was suitable for trucks. So this would help get some of those turn movements at Paradise Lake Road out of the out of the throughput stream and allow them to go on their way and take the trips that they're trying to take, where they're getting stuck in that throughput traffic, so they can get out of that stream and make those turn movements and free people up there trying to continue on through the east-west corridor. So you can see some of the assumptions in here. There is one of the things you're going to hear tonight is there's a number of fish barrier culverts within this corridor that become part of some of the bigger ticket solutions because they have to be replaced and brought up to fish passable standards per federal court order with WSDOT in the state of Washington and the tribes, the Washington State tribes. So there's a number of these culverts. We think we can miss this one. It's, I think, right about there. So we don't think we're going to touch it, and our assumption on cost is somewhere around the $3 million mark. Can maybe be done with a little more engineering, and we can verify some things, maybe a little less than that, but a planning level around $3
million. Councilmember Scarborough?
Why wouldn't you show a left-hand turn lane off of 522 onto Paradise Lake Road also? Eastbound. Right now, traffic comes down there, trucks included, that are turning to go over the commercial properties to the left, and they're creating a left-hand turn lane in the off the white line. Why wouldn't we widen that so it's not quote illegal to do that?
I would say that anything's possible. What we were trying to do here was, when you put down the more, once you go over, I think it's 5,000 square feet, you can try to do some math in your head on that one, I guess, but once you go put down a certain amount of new pavement, a new asphalt, you trigger stormwater treatment and detention requirements that start to add substantial cost to your project. And what we were trying to do here was come up with some low-cost solutions and keep the cost down. We could look at things like adding left turns and things, but the more those things you add in, you start to go, well, maybe we need to, you know, at some point, you start to look at options that are between the super small and simplest like this, and then the full build-out of the interchange. And so there's a lot of things you can do in the middle world of, you know, between the full solution and this kind of smallest, cheapest solution.
I understand.
When I get through a few more slides here, you're going to see we have an idea, a concept for the interchange. It's a lot less expensive than the previous designs that have been done. So you can start to kind of go, well, where do you want to focus your money, I guess.
Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember? Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. So is there a time estimate of how much time would be saved with this particular idea?
I want to say this one is probably about a little less than 2 minutes each direction. If I recall correctly, it's about the same in each direction. What I can do is I can follow up after this and send you just a super simple and something that you can, in a one-page document email or something, that you can see these compared to each other.
That'd be great. Thank you.
I was hoping to integrate it into this and just ran out of time.
I've got one more. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, that's, on this one, I look at that in driving 522 quite a bit. So this is just my experience. It, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like that would really help. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to figure out what that really does. It's been my experience that driving east on 522, end of day, you have more people making a left-hand turn on Paradise Lake than going right.
Okay.
And that backs up traffic,
mm-hmm.
you know,
well, that's true, right?
You know, more than what I'm showing here is what we're trying to solve.
Okay. Well, we, you know, from our traffic engineers looked at what the movements that we thought one that were what could be easiest to
right
easiest to accommodate it at a low cost.
Right.
We can come back to that question about the right turns versus left turns and things like that.
I mean, I get trying to do low cost, you know, something that could be easy, but if it doesn't have much effect, you know, if it's not what we're trying to do, then, you know, I wouldn't advocate for going in that direction.
So. And you're right. I mean, people that are using this as a commute route, you know, given, and I drove it tonight and I've driven it before, and it's not pleasant. You know, during the peak periods and things, that you know, this is going to be just a blip on the radar,
right.
Probably not even noticeable.
Okay.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mr. Basil.
I just want to let council know that the school district head of transportation has been part of the stakeholders group and looked at all these as well for
sure.
Bus movement. So.
Yeah.
And a great contributor to the discussion as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
So now we get into these peak shoulder lane ideas, and peak shoulders are something that's more, becoming more and more common. It's kind of the wave of the future, I think, in a lot of the region here, Puget Sound region, where you're trying to do more with your existing pavement and assets at lower costs, right, with limited funding. So we looked at them, and what you're going to see here is there's four different segments. I'm going to try to summarize them up front. There's four segments, two eastbound, two westbound, and the segments are structured around Echo Fails Lake because you can do segments to the east and to the west, but you can't get them through Echo Fails Lake given the limited width of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to touch that bridge, you might as well finish building the interchange, and that drives the cost up. So again, we're trying to look at ways to keep the cost down. These also assume, up front at least, that we would have what we call active traffic management signs. And these would be cantilever signs that would have, you know, they'd have either green or red designations on them, letting you know if that lane was open for traffic or not. That's kind of the standard place where we start with these, in especially in high volume corridors, which is the only place these are being contemplated right now. That does add a little bit of cost to this, not a huge amount. If we were able to ultimately do these without the electronic signs and just kind of static signs like they have on the US 2 trestle for that really short section, that would reduce the cost by a little bit. So just a little bit of information there. As you can see in this line here, this segment here from 210th to Echo Fails Lake, has a number of fish culverts that would have to be replaced within it. This segment here is eastbound, and eastbound you have a narrow shoulder. So all of these peak shoulders involve some amount of widening the shoulder to make it passable and usable for general purpose and trucks and transit. So you'd have to replace three culverts as part of that. Went the wrong way. And so you can see each one of these will say how much of the total cost is assumed for replacing those culverts. The trick in this is if you take two of these segments, an eastbound and a westbound, and put them together and add them up, you only have to replace the culverts once, so you'd have to deduct that. And I can summarize this stuff and follow up a little in an easy-to-follow fashion, but hopefully that's making sense. So this eastbound section, you can see, would be somewhere to the north of $25 million. The widening, full, to complete the full widening, remember, is about 76. That's the last estimate and fairly recent estimate on that. So that's what you're kind of judging against. One of the challenges with these peak shoulders are that a lot of time they're not utilizing the widening that's previously been done and wouldn't be entirely compatible with the future widening in certain cases. So you'd have some throwaway costs. That's another challenge to think about. So there's another eastbound section here.
Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. This is just on the eastbound or just on the eastbound side?
There's two eastbound and two westbound segments that we looked at.
Okay, so you would have wider shoulders on both sides. Yes. Is there any advantage to just having one side versus the other one widened?
So
I keep thinking of this trestle. I think the eastbound trestle is... they allow the shoulder driving. I don't know about the westbound.
Not the westbound.
It doesn't have one.
We, in looking at this, and when you look at the numbers and spend a little time processing this, you'll find out the westbound traffic tends to be a bit worse. And the costs to do the peak shoulders westbound are less because the shoulders are wider westbound. So the shoulders tend to be on average about 10 feet wide westbound. So we'd have to do very limited widening there, whereas eastbound the shoulders are much narrower. So
there'd be no significant advantage to doing one side versus both.
Westbound's less expensive, put that way.
Okay. But in terms of time?
No. I mean, westbound is, you could argue that westbound is maybe the worst from a traffic perspective, mm-hmm. and it's a little less expensive to build these westbound, so that maybe goes hand in hand. But, it's still not cheap. So.
Okay, got it.
And when I get through all these, it starts to all kind of, the thoughts start to come together. So I'll
go for it.
Thank you.
Keep moving here. So the other eastbound segment is from Echo Fails Lake to the Snohomish River Bridge. And again, widening to 10 feet. We have to widen by 10 feet on top of the existing 4-foot shoulder. And again, this segment here has 4 culverts. So the entire widening segment that we're talking about has 7 culverts total. These culverts are a little more expensive because of the grade, and they're a little bit deeper down than the ones that were further to the west. So these ones are a little more expensive, and there's more of them. And the cost here was, on the low end, about $35 million. So when you add these two together, 35 and 25, you start to get up around 60, and most logic would say if you were to do both of those, the cost of doing it, you might as well just do the ultimate widening because it doesn't really, it doesn't make much sense from a benefit perspective. Then there's westbound. So you'll see this first segment's 95th to Echo Fails. You'll see the cost is a little less. Still has the fish culverts included. We would have to do less widening. If we didn't do the electronic signs, if we were able to kind of, from a safety perspective, get through that, and you might knock this down by a couple million dollars. So say $15 million there for that segment. And then I'll go to the next one just to kind of complete the story, westbound. And this is from Echo Fails to the Snohomish River Bridge. This is that one that has the 4 culverts. And again, this is 26 to 31. So when you add at the low end, 26 and 15, you're a little over 40 to do both segments westbound if you were to propose to do that. It's a little over half the cost of the widening. Might be something worth thinking about, but it's an idea. We did discuss in the workshop the level of traffic demand in this corridor. If you made these general purpose, our expectation is that during the peak periods they'd be pretty full, they'd be pretty congested, and there was some discussion on whether you'd make it HOV and transit only, so to get more people through the corridor overall. It would be a policy decision. It was something that got some discussion, and we left it at that. So now I'm going to go to some of the other ideas. So this one here makes some basic common sense. You may be familiar with previous phases of work in the 522 corridor where between Echo Fails and Snohomish River Bridge, they did the grading for the eastbound lane. So the grading, it's already been, you still have to clear it and you know,
yeah.
And then you know, build up your grade and things, but it's basically been graded to the ultimate profile. And so the idea here is just build those eastbound lanes on the ultimate profile. You know, they would add, you'd add a lane coming in at Echo Fails, you'd go to two lanes eastbound from there to the bridge, and then westbound, you would restripe the existing westbound lanes and then you just drop a lane at Echo Fails. So essentially this becomes a easy first phase of the widening if you did have a full funding at a pretty reasonable price tag.
Yes,
it's a lot of money, but 23 to 28 compared to 76 million, you'd get some noticeable benefits for a portion of the price. And it would, you know, there's a lot of work that's been done behind this that would help you deliver this pretty quick because you've got most of the right way and things like that. So it's an idea, you know, again, it has the culverts within it that we would have to replace, and that's included in the price tag. So you can see what's left, you know, the grading and the paving and the restriping stuff is not a lot. The culvert, the fish passage is a big chunk of the cost. There has been some discussion about would WashDOT be able to bring in some other source funding to help contribute to this, you know. It's a theoretical discussion right now, and the answer is yes, that's a possibility at least. We have to work through a process with WashDOT executives and potentially the governor's office to prioritization of which culverts go first. But if you were able to bring in Fish Passage dedicated money to this, then you would reduce the remaining capital funds you need to build this project. So that's something that also got discussed.
Thank you. So a couple of lights here. Councilmember Scarborough.
So this wouldn't include another bridge at Fails. It would only include lanes from Fails to the existing four lanes.
Right. You essentially do what we call, you'd add a lane going eastbound, and then you drop a lane going westbound, and the bridge would stay the same. So we wouldn't widen the bridge,
yeah.
Which would then bump the cost up noticeably. So this is kind of a low-cost first phase, and pretty easy to implement.
Any other questions, Councilmember? Councilmember Gamble?
So I like the top first phase because then your throwaway costs are a lot less on this option here, correct? Yeah, because you're actually implementing the long-term in a phase. Yeah.
Yeah. And as you're aware, I mean, and this quarter has been, you know, subject to phases of work. You know, when you can, every time you can fund a phase, you build momentum towards,
yes,
you know, the future. But you keep some,
yes,
momentum going and hopefully avoid the disconnects like you've seen has happened here a little bit, right? But hopefully you get some momentum going towards completing the work in the corridor.
Councilmember Cutterback, did you still?
No, it's okay. About throwaway costs.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, this is, you know, next, I mean, minimal throwaway cost.
Yeah.
I mean, next to nothing.
That's the way to go.
So the next one here is the, and this is a kind of ultimate build-out idea, but if you've seen the previous designs for Paradise Lake Road Interchange, and you remember that early slide I had in here, it was valued, the cost was expected to be over $100 million, and had a lot of fairly extensive, expensive local connections, connecting roads and things that required a lot of right-of-way and had pretty significant right-of-way impacts. This is a much more compact solution that still provides all the local connectivity, but keeps it more compact, reduces the right-of-way impacts and the footprint of the project, and is expected to cost about half of what the original plan costed. Of course, I forgot to bring a graphic of the original design, but it's easily accessible on the website and things. This one here has an elevated roundabout that uses structural earth walls, as you can see here, located right there. between Uway and 522, and it connects with a new bridge over the railroad. So this is a way to do, to get the functionality, to the improvements at Paradise Lake at a much lower cost than the previous design. It eliminates the signal at Paradise Lake Road, as you can see there, and configures 522 and Paradise Lake Road to right in, right out, and uses this connection here to provide connections on both sides of 522 to the local street network.
Interesting.
I like it.
So a lot of people in our workshops and things, I think people in general reacted pretty well to this. I mean, it's a starting place. What it does show you is that there are things, and this can be tweaked further. It's a very preliminary engineering planning level concept, but it shows you that there are cheaper ways to do this, kind of from what we tend to call a practical design standpoint, than the previous design. So right there, by cutting this in half, the full, if you were to pursue this, the full cost to complete the corridor goes down from close to $180 million to something that's more of like, $125 to $130. So it's a substantial reduction in overall cost.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough?
What is an elevated roundabout? So the traffic heading out of Monroe here hits the roundabout and can keep going?
No.
How do you, or you have that blue section right
so,
there?
So this, it's giving you, you have both the north, the east-west and the, well, I guess, I get kind of confused.
Mr. White, can you point out 522?
522 is right here. So basically what it does is it gets rid of the signal here and takes out a lot of these local turn and traffic turn movements and things out of the Paradise Lake Road intersection and makes it just a straight through. The intersection is essentially just right in. You can make rights in and out of it. Otherwise, it's just straight through. And it uses a new connection here here to the local frontage road.
Does it have a bridge across 522?
It does have a bridge.
The bridge,
yes.
The blue thing is
the
a
blue
bridge
is a
over
bridge.
22.
Correct. Sorry if that wasn't clear.
Yeah, that's
here.
Right. Okay.
It's here somewhere in the world. It's a new bridge over Uway and the railroad. So again, it connects the local street network and takes out a lot, the majority of those movements from Paradise Lake Road. So you just
stream right through there.
The earlier one was going to take that on past the school, kind of dip down here and reattach to Echo Lake Road or to Paradise Lake Road, correct?
Yeah. It had some roundabouts out here, and then it came out with a connection. Yeah. Out through there, a lot more expensive.
Councilmember Cutaback.
Do you guys have an estimate of how many cars that would take off 522? I mean, is that part of the planning? I mean, that's the goal, right? It's cars would be diverted off 522 that are going.
It's allowing people that are trying to access the local street networks network in the Maltby area and kind of cross over 522.
Right.
It allows them to utilize that local arterial network and stay out of 522.
Right.
For the most part, right, and makes 522 more just east-west centric throughput.
So do you know? I mean, do you have an estimate?
We don't have it. The analysis we were able to do is not that precise to
right.
probably have that number. I can follow up.
I'm curious.
Kind of best judgment.
Because it seems like traffic jams up right when you go over the bridge, which is way before this. If you're headed westbound, it jams up much earlier, and I don't know. I'm trying to kind of estimate or think how much this would really solve the traffic that is on 522. We still need people to have on 522 being one lane. When it goes down to one lane, you still have that jam up of traffic. I'm trying to get a sense of how much this would really alleviate traffic on 522, like how many cars would actually, like, trying to figure out what the number.
I mean, I experienced Paradise Lake Road tonight, and it was pretty congested and backed up. You know, this would change that pretty significantly. But you're right, if this wasn't paired with the widening, you still have other problems out there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, from an ultimate solution standpoint, though, if you pair this with the widening, since I believe the goal is still to complete all the ultimate improvements, at least this shows you that there are some ideas to do this for less.
Right.
If you just build this on its own, you know, I think we would say that you're better off widening the corridor, doing the widening before you did this,
right,
from an overall traffic perspective.
Okay, that would be my sense too, just looking at these.
So I wasn't suggesting that we were saying that you just build this and not do anything else. This is more to show that we did put some time into some other ideas to see if we could come up with something lower cost.
Okay.
Because the $100 million interchange price tag is a hard one to overcome,
right,
you know, to come up with from a funding perspective.
Thank you.
So.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, the only thing I'd point out, though, Patsy, is that from a connecting the community perspective for schools and stuff, as soon as you do that, there's the you know, you can get off at Echo, you can take a frontage road, get up, and then get over.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of those people that are taking kids to school and all that kind of stuff that are on the opposite side of 522, exactly, or that are coming from Echo Lake.
Mm-hmm.
It would be huge, and I think it would help. I mean, to me, as a westbound, more of a westbound solution. The reason why it frees up a little bit towards the top is because it goes to two lanes right before the light, and so people are loading in there, and then they load into that left-hand turn lane. That left-hand turn lane loads up, and they're making that, you know, that left. So that would potentially could take a lot of that traffic out, because they might get off on the exit, you know, prior, so they're not actually funneling through. But it would, in my opinion, just looking at you know, if you did it on your own, it'd be a westbound, you know, deal. Without the widening, you know, from Echo Fails to the bridge, then that would just exacerbate the eastbound issue.
Thank you.
So the reversible lane idea, we looked at this a little bit, and part of the problem is, you know, you're building in the middle and widening out, so you're widening both sides, and to do a reversible lane safely would require a barrier and a corridor like this at high speeds. Would almost certainly, and is assumed here, require barrier separation, which is the reversible lane on I-90 and I-5 all have barrier separation. So, we don't think we could ever justify doing a reversible lane without barrier from a safety perspective. And so, the amount of widening that it takes to build this really becomes cost prohibitive really quick. It also has some challenges about, well, what happens at the interchanges? You know, if you build it, are you doing this between the interchanges? You know, trying to get through the interchanges, how do you make the connections? Is this just an express through? It becomes problematic for a number of reasons, and the cost, you know, is enough given those challenges and issues that it really probably doesn't make sense. It also isn't very compatible with the future widening. It'd have a lot of throwaway cost because of the barrier and other things you'd have to put in there, and gates.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have gates to shut it, you know, one direction and the other, and then open it, you know, AM and PM to switch directions. You'd have some maintenance staff that would have to go out and make sure that that happens safely, you know, for our safety policy. So it really just doesn't work in this corridor. But we gave it a look.
Thank you.
So just to summarize, and this is all things that you probably picked up on through this. I mean, there are some real low cost, a couple of real low cost ideas that we came up with. We have a number of these kind of more medium cost options that could be pursued if some additional funding was secured, but funding that was less than what we need to build out the ultimate. You know, there's a variety of options on the table that could be pursued further. Reversible lane doesn't look like it makes much sense. given the cost and operational issues. The phase widening looks attractive if you didn't have the full widening funding up front, but we're able to secure some additional funding. There are definitely some other design ideas at Paradise Lake that are less expensive and look entirely feasible here and would have less impacts on the community but make the connections that you need to make the 522 corridor work more efficiently. And again, transit and transportation demand management and other things are all kind of part of moving more people or getting people to think about differently about how they take their trips. But on their own right now aren't going to solve the existing problems in the corridor. And then just a note that, you know, the optimal solution here at the end of the day is to make some improvements in the corridor and make it better and have a better connection to 405. Mm-hmm. If you get that, then things will be looking pretty good into the further future. What are we doing right now? We're completing what we call a little folio that can be used to kind of communicate the outcomes of this effort and some supporting documents. You know, talking to stakeholders like this tonight. The ledge session coming up, you know, engaging in questions regarding the corridor. If right now what we're trying to, a lot of what we do is answer questions about, well, if you were able to bring some design money forward or something, you know, what would you focus on? And I think this effort gives us some good ideas on that we can speak to and what we might focus on at different investment levels if the legislature becomes open to, you know, modest movements of money within Connecting Washington. So that's something we're looking to them to see if they ease up on flexibility within Connecting Washington. Because right now, Connecting Washington doesn't, there's no way that WashDOT has the ability to make any changes in the timing and aging of the money without a ledge session, outside of a ledge session. So previous transportation packages have had what we call a change management process, where as long as you can keep the overall cash flow the same, you can make minor changes. So we'll see if the legislature steps up to this session. They're talking about it, at least. It's something that's on their radar. And so I think we have some great ideas to build on if we're able to bring a little more funding to this near term versus 2025.
Sounds good. Council members, any questions, comments? I thank you very much for coming this evening and for giving the presentation.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me. And like I said, there's a number of slides after this that you can peruse on your own and that have some information to answer some of those questions about travel times and things. So
a couple things. We're looking forward to having a community open house of sorts sometime in late January, so I'm sure staff will be in touch with you about that.
Okay.
We want to make we get a lot of comments through email and also through social media from people, you know, wanting to see what sort of alternatives there are. And so I think it would be beneficial for DOT to be able to come out and set up just an open house where people can walk around and take a look at the different alternatives and whatnot. So staff will be in contact with you about that. And I really appreciate you coming out here. The other thing, too, is it seems like there are other funding opportunities. I know that I've had conversations with the county about and DOT about maybe applying for money with PSRC and things like that.
We've been, I think as you know, we've been engaged with the county on a number of grant discussions, and the big obstacle we have in it right now, at least, is that all these grant programs, whether it's the federal or if it's the state level, they require a local match.
Uh-huh.
And so some of them have it, because the Connecting Washington money on this project or in the corridor isn't out until 2025, the state doesn't have that match.
Mm-hmm.
For the grants, you know, and that's the challenge we have, and we've been talking to the county about that. That becomes one of the questions about if you could move a little bit of that $10 million forward, then that could be potentially be used as a match to do some further design work or further work in the corridor. So. And that's a conversation we're engaged with the county on, because we all think that this would prioritize well in, say, the county competitive grant process through PSRC, the county discretionary process that they have. if we are able to come up with the matching funds.
Okay.
So there is some opportunity potentially there.
Okay. Lastly, you're going to send us this so we can go ahead and put it online so that members of the public can look at it and that the monitor can look at it too. And excellent. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
And again, I'd be happy to follow up on any further questions and things that come to mind.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet, and public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. And we have Ezra Eckelmeyer here. Mr. Eckelmeyer? Yep. Please state your name and address for the record, and thank you very much for coming out.
Thank you very much. My name is Ezra Eichmeyer, and I'm usually too tall for these things. I live in Quilcene, Washington, P.O. Box 504, Quilcene, Washington, 98376. I am a state lobbyist for the marijuana industry. I do most of my state work with the state legislature. I've been involved with the industry as a lobbyist, amongst other industries. For a number of years, I've seen a lot of the changes. You know, after the legalization initiative passed here in Washington, a lot of cities, like Monroe, had some concerns about allowing retail stores in the jurisdictions, which was understandable. We've got a track record now to look at. And so what I've been doing is traveling the state, reaching out to various city councils. There are over 90 cities right now that have a banner moratorium in place. And in eastern and western Washington, I'm talking to city councils who are feeling like it's time to review the situation and whether it's appropriate to potentially open up to allowing a retail store in each city. And one of the reasons that it is important to kind of have this dialogue is that we are doing a great job of eliminating the crime aspect of the marijuana trade in all of the jurisdictions that have retail stores. You know, as we all know, marijuana has been in our communities for decades, and traditionally it's been sold by an illicit market, which has very efficiently got marijuana to everybody who wanted it, including high school kids. And so really the choice before all of our communities is not whether or not to have marijuana in our communities. The choice is whether we're going to have illicit drug dealers selling it, or if we're going to have licensed, regulated, tax-paying stores selling it. We're not talking about a new product creating a lot of new users. We're talking about taking existing sales and getting them into the regulated system to help start cutting off youth access, to generate tax revenues to the state. Right now, while we're still literally kind of in launch mode, if you will, the first couple of years of this experiment, our industry is already generating over $25 million a month to the state in tax revenues. And my estimation, as one of the state's lead lobbyists for the industry, is that we've captured maybe 70 or 80% of the total illicit market into the regulated stores. And so now what I would like to propose to Monroe City Council, as I am to many others, including Linwood and Kennewick and all over Washington, is whether you would invite us to come in and have a dialogue to see if you might be ready to allowing at least one retail store. If the majority of the 90 cities with a ban or a moratorium would allow at least one store per jurisdiction, we can all but eliminate the illicit market, get the crime aspect eliminated from the marijuana trade, and start, you know, focusing on then mitigating the downsides of marijuana, which there are some, and we need to have a real dialogue about that, the pros and cons. So I'd propose to the City Council that you invite me and maybe another representative in to talk about the pros and cons and see if Monroe is open. And if you are open, then I would be available to help you out, work out reasonable regulations to make sure that you don't have conflicts within the community. So I'll email you all as a follow-up so you have my contact, and thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? We have our County Council Member Sam Lowe here from District 5.
Good evening, Council. Sam Lowe, 11002 UCT Loop Road, Lake Stevens. So 2 weeks ago today, I started on County Council, and I've been working tirelessly on 522. First day in office, I got sworn in Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday morning started on 5/22, and have a meeting set up with your mayor in 2 days. And Monday I had the opportunity to address our executive, our full county council, and legislators from all over Snohomish County right before they're heading to Olympia. And one of the things I shared with them was the Highway 522 traffic congestion that the school district put out earlier this year. And inside of that, it showed that the buses were late to school 158 times just in the first half of the school year last year, from September to January, and 6,478 students from September to January 2016 were not in their classrooms ready to learn at the start of their first period. And when I shared that with the legislators, their mouths dropped. And I got requests from my office to get this information to them. And WASDOT did a great job tonight in doing what they do, but we need to push our legislators. Now, as an elected official, I can't ask people to call and make phone calls and stuff, but I can, as an elected official, work with other elected officials and get this information into their hands, speed up the process, because 10 years, as we can all agree, is too long. So we need to speed that up. I'm working on it. My office is working on it. The county council has now made it a legislative priority. Up until a few weeks ago, it wasn't even a legislative priority for the county. So now it is a legislative priority. I've already had meetings with the executive's office, with Senator Pearson, Guy Colombo, and several other legislators, and trying to push this forward. So I want you to know that my office is open, available, and want to work together to make sure that we get 522 going. So thanks for your time, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Heard, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the city council this evening? Anybody at all? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 7-0. There are two ordinances to read into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Approved through the consent agenda this evening is Ordinance Number 026-2016, amending Title VI Monroe Municipal Code by the addition of a new Chapter 6.05, Chronic Nuisance Properties thereto, designating properties with a documented persistent history of legal noncompliance as chronic nuisances subject to enforcement and abatement, adopting standards and procedures therefore, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective. Also approved was Ordinance Number 027-2016, amending Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 2.44, City Administrator, clarifying the respective roles of the Mayor and City Council, respectively, concerning said office, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to final action number one. This is AB 16-183, Ordinance Number 024-2016, adopting the 2017 budget for final reading. Ms. Nelson.
Seems like we were just discussing this week.
Yeah.
Okay, before you is hopefully the final budget for 2017. The changes made from last week's discussion is the addition of the $20,000 for the recruitment search for the new city administrator, the $60,000 for the estimated cost for the contracted social worker services, and the increase to the general fund reserve requirement, because when we increase expenditures, it increases the reserve requirement. And the contingency fund is transferring $90,000 to the general fund to cover all those three items. And the contingency fund balance will now be year end $933,000. And if you have any questions, I am more than happy to answer them.
Council members, any questions or a motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Just want to make sure to clarify the 36 for the health district that was on the first reading last week.
It is in the administration department's budget, yes.
Okay.
Anything further?
No.
Okay. Any other questions, Councilmember Cutterback.
Diane, thank you for your work on this and all the staff. It's a great job. Thank you, Mayor, for presenting a great budget. So I'll make a motion. Move to adopt ordinance number 024-2016, adopting the budget for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2017.
Second.
Okay, we have a first from Councilmember Cutterback, a second from Councilmember Gamble to move to adopt ordinance number 024-2016, adopting the budget for the fiscal year ending in ending December 31st of 2017. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 7-0. And I echo what Councilmember Cutterback said. Thank you all staff very much for the hard work you did. Council, thank you very much for the hard work you did in reviewing the material and just last week pointing out a couple items that were supposed to have been in the budget. I really appreciate that. Great job, everybody. All right. The next item that we have on the agenda then is final action number 2. This is AB 16-184, ordinance number 025-2016, amending the 2016 budget. Final reading. Ms. Nelson.
This is exactly the same as what was brought to you last week. There have been no changes, and basically to keep us in budgetary compliance by year end.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. No questions, but I'll make a motion to move to adopt ordinance number 025-2016, amending the budget for fiscal year 2016 to account for new revenues and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second from Councilmember Gamble to move to adopt ordinance number 025-2016, amending the budget for fiscal year 2016 to account for new revenue and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Sam.
Diane, those are your last budgets.
Yes, they are.
Congratulations.
But who's counting?
We should have drugged that out a little more.
Go get yourself a cupcake.
Yeah.
We could do a reconsideration.
Yeah, reconsideration.
All right. That takes care of our final action. We now have council member reports. Before we go on... Oh, okay. I see. We're going to move that under staff reports.
Yep.
Perfect. Okay. And Mr. Wall's still here. Okay, perfect. We're going to pull Mr. Wall in under department reports, so we don't want to lose him. Okay, thanks. All right. Councilmember reports. City Council Legislative Affairs Committee was canceled this evening, so Snohomish County tomorrow, Steering Committee. Councilmember Camp.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. Pretty brief. We covered the regional policy priorities for Snohomish County. Transportation infrastructure is the big point coming up for 2017, and I'll leave this with the city clerk, so if you want a copy of it, pretty much things that we've all discussed up here about our what we wanted to look at just for Monroe, just an expanded a little bit. The only other thing from there, of course, at the end of year, we congratulated everybody on accomplishments this year. A representative from, and I, this is just totally out of the blue, a representative from the city of Lake Stevens brought their comprehensive plan to present to Snohomish City Council. I don't know if anybody really is going to be concerned about that next year, but there you go.
I'm not concerned.
But I had to throw that one out there. He's ignoring me. Now I really feel bad. You didn't hear anything?
Sorry. No, he was.
Anyway, that's all we have. Thank you.
Apparently, he's got something from some other city that takes employees
yes.
from us.
Lake Stevens
yeah.
did their comprehensive plan. You may want to look at it.
Yes. Can I get a copy?
Okay, that's it for me.
We'll have to charge you for it. okay, great. Snohomish Health District Board of Directors. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Packed agenda. Cliff notes. We discussed somewhat finalized our governance. This has been an ongoing conversation since we pulled the trigger on moving forward on keeping the health district as its own entity versus putting it underneath the Snohomish County government umbrella. And
So really the health district is going to be made of essentially three committees, executive committee, public health program policy committee, and the administrative. The exec committee kind of oversees and takes a lot of the normal board actions that we would normally see within the regular board meetings. The program policy, pretty self-explanatory, talks about our health policies, and then the administrative are the focus on carrying out those policies. And so by January, we hope to have all board members put in place with amongst those committees and rolling in the new roles. So the health district staff has asked, and we'll probably have more information coming from the Heather or Peter on this, but we're trying to build some continuity amongst the board and those that are serving on it. And so currently the way it is right now is that it's a one-year term for every board member, and then every year that representing council member, if they want to continue to run, they got to go back to their councils that they represent. In my case, it's five cities, and throw their hat back in the ring and go through the whole process again. To keep that continuity, they're asking to have it a two-year position, which I, serving on enough boards and commissions, yeah, 1 year is just very, very tough to get any traction going. So I'm in full support of a two-year position, and just for this council's knowledge, I would certainly love to continue serving as Monroe's representative on the Board of Health next year as well. So and of course need to have those conversations with the other four cities that are represented. So probably saw or may have seen on in the Herald recently an article of shared health officer role. And so Dr. Gary Goldbaum, our current health officer, is retiring at the end of March. And one thing that he's really proposing and advocating for is a change in that leadership structure, where our health district has a health officer, just a health officer, and then an administrator. And so the health officer can focus on the medical, the health aspects of the district, where an administrator can carry out the day-to-day operations and oversee the staff. Currently, all staff, including the deputy director, roll up to our health officer, which adds a lot more onto their plate and kind of takes away from some of the health responsibilities. So the board was very much in favor of this new structure, and under the proposal that we reviewed today, we essentially are eliminating two FTE and then replacing it with one FTE as an administrator, and then one FTE as the health officer, but then we share a quarter FTE of that with Skagit County. And so our health officer would pull double duty for Snohomish County and Skagit County. Potential cost savings with that would be about $48,000-$50,000 just on that FTE, just having that 0.25%. So we'll probably have further discussion on that next month, but again, the board was very much in favor of that as well. Yes?
Go ahead.
Was that the board's in favor? Was that a recommendation of the health district staff recommending that new structure? Was Dr. Goldblum, as he's leaving, recommending that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. His recommendation was the catalyst of it all, and it had the support of the staff. Apparently, we are the Snohomish Health District. We are, I believe you said, one of two health districts in the state that operate under this current model.
Right.
Everyone else has health officer and then administrator. So, yeah. Rucker Building, where the health district is housed at. The real estate committee has had several meetings since our last board meeting and has recommended to sell the building. It's old, it's fallen apart, there's a lot of empty space in there, and the reality is our health district staff are just not property managers, and so go figure. So they calculated that in addition to that, there's about $2 million worth of capital improvements that need to happen to that building. Yeah, it is in rough shape. If you're to just walk into the main lobby there, you can definitely tell. So their recommendation is to sell that. Unfortunately, there's quite the process that needs to clear on that. When the health district was formed and purchased that building, or had purchased that building, there was a vested ownership amongst several cities. I don't know if Monroe was one of those cities or not, but you know, if we were, we're probably going to get asked to help out and relinquish ownership or to some degree or whatnot, just so that they can clear a title and work that out, as amongst to a few other things as well.
Mr. Basil?
We did put pretty significant amount of time digging through files and history and couldn't find anything here.
Okay.
But I'll make sure I put it on the, we've got a to-do list of things that I've been working on. We'll go ahead and add that. So thanks for reminding me about that.
Awesome.
Good. County Council Member and Health District Board Member Ken Klein recognized him for his service on the Health District. May have heard that he is moving out of the County Council role and working in the Executive Office. So the nice thing is he's going to continue to be our Executive Liaison or Executive Staff to the Health District. So he'll still be involved. He just won't be in the same capacity as currently. And then finally, the budget. I'm so happy we passed the budget tonight. As you had heard from the numerous presentations from the health district, as well as me talking frequently, the outlook was somewhat grim for the health district, but the budget committee did just some amazing work and brought us a budget that only eliminated 8.15 FTE within the health district staff, and those are vacant positions. And so everyone that's currently employed with the health district will still be employed January 1, which was the ultimate goal. The FTE that's been eliminated is primarily in the public health sectors, environmental health, public health nurse, program assistant, health and community specialist, dental hygienist, amongst those positions. So, and again, those are vacant positions, so there's no actual bodies in those roles right now. A lot of the success of being able to pass this budget was from cities like Monroe that opted to support public health with a per capita support. And the latest report that we got tonight was the majority of cities in our Snohomish County are supporting per capita funding to some degree. I personally want to thank this council for really stepping in and addressing the importance of public health within our communities, and frankly taking a rather big leadership role with this per capita funding. If you go peer through the agenda packet, there's a PowerPoint slide that shows the status of our per capitas. And many cities were dollar per capita. Monroe, Snohomish, and Snohomish County for the
unincorporated parts were the only ones that were willing to do $2 per capita. So again, thank you to this council for being supportive of public health. This is huge, and I believe this sends a huge statement to the rest of the cities, especially those that chose not to participate, but really shows that we're over here, and you know, we're involved, and we matter. So again, thank you for that. And then really the only other concern that we had with the budget that came out was, as you remember from previous presentations, is that roughly 25-26% of the district's funding comes from state and federal grants. There is concern amongst the board as well as staff with the current administration coming in of if that's going to change any federal or state grants that get issued that we normally get. So, you know, staff and board are definitely watching very closely on that. But fingers crossed none of that changes. So, and that was it in a quick summary.
quick. I thank you very much for going and giving a quick but thorough summary. I appreciate that.
Definitely.
Council members, are there any questions or comments for Council Member Rasmussen for the Health District? Okay. So we'll go ahead and we'll go down the line now. Council Member Gamble.
Good to be back. It's been... I think I looked at the calendar, it's been 4 weeks. We had those two meetings that were canceled at the end of November. And then the week before that, I was out of town in, I think, Minnesota. And then last week was in Denver. So it's a month off. A lot of stuff has happened in a month around our great little city and the light up Monroe and just all the decorations. And I know I brought this up before, you know, Monroe Public School Foundation that does a lot of work in our community. They had a pretty big event, the high school ran their play Clue, and they got to utilize the new microphone setup over ear for the first time, and went and saw that production, and it was fantastic. What a difference it makes to actually have state-of-the-art stuff. There was no feedback. You could actually hear the performance, and the kid, yeah, they just did a fantastic job. So that was really, really cool to see. Also, just a quick little reminder, where all that funding comes for the different grants, and whether it's for Sky Valley Education Centers or any one of the schools, is the biggest fundraising event for the foundation is their annual auction. So put it on your calendars now, because I know some of us plan a quarter and a half in advance or whatever, but it's going to be on St. Patty's Day this year, March 17th, which is a Friday, so I'll make sure you guys all get invites. It's going to be at the Xfinity Arena, so they're going to change the venue so we can involve more people. One of the limitators has been in the past is that we haven't had enough. It's a very popular event. And we haven't had a venue to house the size of folks that want to come, so we're going to have a venue that holds more people. But the only way that it makes it work, so we make sure that money goes to more kids, is that we have people show up and fill those seats, because the cost is a little bit more in that facility. But anyway, so get it on your calendars, and it'll be a great event, and then we get to support more programs like that that just helps even, you know, more in the, you know, overall arts community in the city. I know we've got the efforts downtown with the Arts Council and that kind of stuff, but obviously the school is an integral part of that as well. So that was really neat to see. I'd be remiss to not say Happy Thanksgiving. Everybody, I know it's been that long. Crazy. There was this thing called an Apple Cup while I was gone. I don't know. Anybody know who won that one? That was a good game. And a Pac-12 championship. So just lots of fun and the holidays. And here we go.
Come back and just try to rub it in.
Pretty much.
Councilmember Camp.
Nothing to report.
Councilmember Davis.
Nothing. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Attended the chamber luncheon this afternoon, and you know, hearing about the high school drama group. Had a couple of numbers by the high school choir and barbershop quartet at the luncheon today, which is awesome. They did a fantastic job. So great to see, or great to hear. You know, just to follow up on, was it Ezra with regards to the marijuana. Just put it out there to this council that the health district is an incredible resource for any of that data. That if you do need or do want some additional data, feel free to reach out to the health district staff for any of that. And you know, they've been quick to dig that stuff up. So just throw that out there. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford.
Last week I attended the town hall foster care system in crisis in Seattle. And so that was very interesting, and I'd like to stay involved as much as I can with that. So that's pretty much it.
Nice. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks.
Nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Just one question, Chief. Can you speak to the statistics that this fellow Ezra was speaking to, that having a pot store in town is taking away 80% of the illicit marijuana business, etc.? I don't know.
Taking away the illegals?
Was that any information that you're talking about from the health district? This fellow has offered to come and give us those kinds of that right. kind of information. Where do we confirm that kind of information? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Somebody, maybe you can tell me.
Maybe towns that have legalized it or accepted it. Mm-hmm. See if their crime rate's gone down and drug busts or.
So what he said he would do is he would send council members more information.
Yeah.
Council can certainly add that to a future agenda if you want to have a conversation about it. So that's where things are, as I understood from his presentation.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Out, Pam, how's the court?
Good.
Okay, good.
And all the tables are out in the morning.
Nice. Mr. Farrell.
Mayor, yep. First off, this Saturday at 9 a.m. at Lakeside Park is the rerun. It's a 5K, 10K, and half marathon event, so it'll be fun. In your packet is a copy of the Julie Morris mm-hmm. Community Gardens annual report, and a note in there, it's really neat stuff. A total of 3,821 pounds of produce was raised in that garden for the food bank. And there's a breakout by vegetable that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And they also came up with the monetary value of that, you know, by vegetable, but also a total of $10,371 worth of produce. So that just really just stands out as an amazing thing that's just, you know, down the street here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that includes 70 volunteers, many of whom are Monroe Garden Club members. Mm-hmm. They spent a total of 1,120 hours volunteering, so just amazing. So it's a great report. And the other thing is, back in the corner there is one of the banners. We just received them from the company that produced them, and as you can see, it ties in with the Snohomish County Tourism's brand and the Rose brand. They open up and compete here, and there we have. What do we have? Some different sports figures there, representing different sports. I think that one. I think the council feedback helped to create that. That actual banner there. But we have all the different, I believe there's 13 different designs, and we have about 83 total banners that we received because we received that Snohomish County LTAC grant award. It's $9,600. So after the holidays, those will go out downtown and also around the North Kelsey on the street poles. That's all I have.
Awesome.
Any questions for the Parks Department? Okay. Ms. Nelson?
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Mr. Asaki?
Our Planning Commission met last night. It was our last meeting of the year. And we talked about the work program for next year. Thank you to the City Council because part of the budget includes some funds hire a consultant to work on some of the development regulations and picking up our codes that we just haven't been able to do this year because of so much development activity. Certainly, that is probably the number one priority for next year, although some of the items we want to get to sooner rather than later are we have about three or four ordinances that deal with permit processing that are basically pretty well drafted, so we'll be moving those to the Planning Commission earlier in the year and then maybe some strategic changes for assigning those to deal with some issues there.
Any questions for Mr. Osaki? Okay. Mr. Feilberg.
The Public Works monthly reports in the packet, and we mentioned to you earlier that we were in line for three grants to walkway in front of the fairgrounds on Highway 2 to do the design work for the extension of the walkway along Kinley Road and some sidewalk installations in the area of 182nd and 154th. And yesterday we found out we didn't get any of them.
Oh, you built us up there,
yeah.
Brad.
So, we're on the list, but they ran out of money before they got to us.
Oh.
So.
Next time.
How are we doing with the crossings of the railroad tracks with the sidewalk extensions at Frylands and one?
It's all with Burlington Northern.
Okay.
They're thinking about it.
They're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not going to try to railroad us. And
Put up.
Put up. Okay. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Feilberg? No. Chief.
Today, our PROACT team, along with the North Sound Metro SWAT team and the local patrols, served a narcotic search warrant on 182nd Avenue Southeast at an individual's frequent flyers residence. We located methamphetamines, heroin, stolen property, and a large amount of drug paraphernalia with multiple charges coming soon. I think most of you hopefully received that email.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Chief? Chief, please, on behalf of the council and me, please thank the officers and the SWAT for all being involved in that. We really appreciate the work that they do. Thank you. All right. Gene, do you have anything? Liz, you've got something.
I know. Shocking. I just wanted to follow up on an email I sent a week or so ago about the AWC City Action Days. They're in February this year. The registration is open now, and as we found in previous years, the rooms at the site, which is the Red Lion in Olympia, fill up very quickly. So I would just encourage you that if you are planning to attend, that you get with Mayor Thomas. He is definitely planning to attend, and we can get together and figure out how many rooms we might want to reserve and get people registered for that so that we make sure that you can be there and be on site and set up those meetings to meet with legislators and whatnot. So just a little reminder on that.
Thanks. And you're going to confirm that I did say I'm doing both nights? Or were we still up in the air?
Up in the air, but okay. I will get you.
Both nights, okay. What's so is again? As soon as you know, do you know what the dates are?
I believe it's, I can look it up right now and get back to you, but I think it's somewhere around like the 17th, 18th of February. Let's see if I can do a quick Google.
Okay. 15th, 16th?
15th.
She's looking it up right now.
You're what?
February 15th and 16th, 2017.
February what?
15th and 16th, and I believe that's normally what, a Wednesday and a Thursday?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so the nights would be a...
The 14th is one of the nights?
Ooh.
Yeah. No, I will not be in Olympia on Valentine's Day.
Which
no.
is also a meeting, FYI. That is a Tuesday night.
Okay, I will be missing that meeting. So, yeah, it's a good thing we're talking. So just not the 15th good. To the 16th.
Carton candy.
Carton candy won't. Okay. Does anybody know right now that they'll be able to attend the 15th and 16th of February? Councilmember Cutterback.
Come on, road trip.
Anybody
probably
else?
Come on, boys, road trip.
Probably, yeah, I'll put me down. Probably, like, go home, check
Okay, so Councilmember Davis? Councilmember Scarborough, did you say
probably,
that?
Probably, but I want to go home.
Okay, we want to know definitely. So if you could do me a favor and Councilmember...
I will not be there. I'll be out of the state.
Okay. So we have Councilmember Davis confirmed, Councilmember Cutterback confirmed, I am confirmed. And if you would like to go, please email Liz by the end of this week, because as she pointed out, the rooms at the site actually fill up quickly. The way that these conferences go, sometimes the meetings go late, and sometimes there's early morning stuff. It's easier just to be located where the conference actually occurs. So I would encourage that.
And just a reminder, it's the schedule is a full day on the 15th, yeah, starting at 8:30 a.m. And then the second day is a half day. So that's just a reminder. So normally we do just schedule the one night there, since we do have a meeting on the 14th. So the Wednesday night would be the one night that we'd have there, and then of course make some sort of plan to travel over there in the morning.
Right. We have a council meeting on Valentine's Day. We'll see if that happens. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I'm not going to be at the council meeting on the 14th. Letting you know in advance.
We'll put that down on the extended agenda, possible cancellation for Valentine's Day for the council. That's a lot of love. Okay. So we've taken care of two things. Anything else? Liz, anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Mayor.
Gene, yes, Mr.
Quick
Basil.
Update for Council. I've prepared an email for you tomorrow updating you on the status of the interim city administrator. Yes, thank you, Pat.
I'm holding this up to him all the time.
So I will be sending that out in the morning. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to contact me prior to next week, because you guys will be confirming that appointment, or at least it's on the docket for next week. So the one thing I did want to let Council know, that staff is, and Mayor, is, of course, has been working really hard to fill these positions that we've had. And it's been interesting that the majority of the candidates have talked about the excellent relationship that Council has, not only with the Mayor, but with the staff, and that the great work we're doing here at this city, and that's why they wanted to come and be a part of it. And it's just, you know, a lot of them, or some of them, said that they'd been digging through Google and trying to find some dirt that's going on in Monroe, and there's just nothing to be found, because this is a collaborative group and they recognize it. So good work to everybody here, and staff included. So
that's all. Thanks. And on that, I'll just go over some of the things that I've been working on. Last week we had a second interview with a finance director candidate. Things are moving in a very optimistic direction on that right now. We would likely, if things continue to check out and everything, be bringing forward somebody for council's consideration of appointment right around the 10th of January or so. The work that has to occur for a finance director will take just a little bit of time, and the goal is to have that person on board February 1st. So that we can have a couple months overlap with Ms. Nelson before she departs on April 30th. Did I get the date right this time?
Yeah, it's a party.
Yeah.
Wow. Smiling.
Yeah, she's constantly smiling when we bring that subject up. We had four applicants for the interim city administrator position through Prothman. We interviewed three of them. One of them was not available. Three of them were recently city managers in other jurisdictions. One of them has 40 years of experience as both a city manager and also a city administrator. And we had like 1 hour interviews with each one of them on Friday. So we spent considerable time with everybody. And it, also to let you know, when we brought back the finance director for the second interview, the finance director candidate for the second interview, we had line staff interview her, in addition to having the directors interview her and also me. So we want to make certain we've got a fit for people that come in here. We, with the interim city administrator, we had an interview with basically the directors and me, and then a separate interview just with me following that. So I'm really optimistic about the individual. That first, they were all great applicants, by the way. They're all really great interviews wonderful people, very talented. I think all four of them could do the job. And I'll be bringing forward somebody next week, and I'm just holding back names for right now until you get the packets later this week. So, okay. We then, Thursday night, I attended the Economic Alliance After Hours. The Economic Alliance of Snohomish County held their After Hours, their mixer, at Brookdale. And I had an opportunity to talk about how wonderful our city is to the group there, and that... you know, it was great talking to all the different people that came from different areas to this After Hours to learn more about Monroe and talk with some of the local business owners. And a big shout-out thank you to Public Works for all the work they did with handling the snow on Friday. Kept the roads passable, and I think you guys probably went out there a couple times because it kept snowing all day. So, Brad, please share with the staff a hearty thank you from Mayor and from Council for the work on that. Later this week, I've got a meeting with Representative-elect Palumbo and also with County Councilmember Sam Lowe and Mr. Wall to talk about 522. I will also be meeting with Representative-elect John Koster for breakfast on Friday to talk about legislative agenda and also 522. So those are a couple things that I have going on that I'm recalling right now. Does anybody have any questions for me? All right, we're going to hand things over to Gene. Gene.
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda for Tuesday, December 20th, 2016, last meeting of the year. Under announcements and presentations, we'll have the 2017 legislative priorities, and green light strategies will be here for that. We have the confirmation of interim city administrator appointment. We have the consent agenda. Under final action, we have the resolution amending the fee schedule for 2017. Under council member reports, we have the transportation and planning public works meeting. That's tentative. We don't have anything on that right now. I think Liz sent out an email. So,
should we cancel that meeting for next week for the committee?
I would recommend that. Any objections? Yeah, let's cancel that.
So we'll cancel that.
Okay. Thank you.
And then we have mayor admin reports, and then I see somebody snuck something on here under
I did that.
Special orders of the day of recognizing myself, so thank you. I better be here.
I asked her if I could put roast there, but she said it's called special orders of the day.
Any additions or deletions?
Okay. And council members, I am going to ask you to watch your email this week. Okay. Staff may be trying to get a hold of you to come in and do something between now and Tuesday next week. Okay?
Roger that.
Okay. All right. Extended agenda. Oh, council member Hanford. Sorry.
Oh, good. I was just going to move to... I'll go ahead and, since you called on me, I move to cancel the business meeting on December 27th and January 3rd.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, and I have a thumbs up and a second from Councilmember Gamble to cancel the business meeting of December 27th and also January 3rd. Those are 2016 and 2017, respectively. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Extended agenda?
Any additions or deletions? Are you going to be absent?
Okay. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, I would. I listened to the audio from last week's meeting. Mm-hmm. Well, I should say I listened to most of it. It was like a 3-hour meeting. And for whatever reason, on my city phone, every time I push pause and then push play, the whole thing started all over again.
Oh, geez.
So I got through all the public comment. I got through all the discussion about term limits and some of the business meeting. Yeah. But I was absent that night and would have loved to have been part of the discussion. on the term limits. I know Councilmember Gamble was absent as well. So I'd like to add that back on the agenda for us to discuss with the whole council sometime in January.
Okay. Do you want to target January 10th, 17th, or 24th?
The 10th might be busy because of what's going on. So as long as we're all in town, probably like the 17th.
Okay. How's everybody's calendar looking for the 17th? Can everybody be here?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll add that as for January 17th. And are you looking for additional information in terms of an agenda bill? I'm just thinking about our new interim city administrator and having that prepped.
No.
Okay.
Just further discussion on
for open discussion.
What I missed.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I would.
Okay, Councilmember Kent?
If I could. If we could get information about the current county turmoil, just a brief description
okay.
set up.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we'll make certain that there's some information that describes what the term limits are at the county level. Anything else for the extended agenda? Okay. Do remember that January 12th right now we have scheduled a community workshop to talk about Blueberry and Kelsey, and that's not shown on the extended agenda, but it's something I would encourage council members to attend.
What time?
And I don't have a time per se yet. I would imagine that it would be about a 6 p.m. ish,
okay.
give or take.
Yeah.
And it'll
we were going 5 to 7.
Let's do 5 to 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where?
And it'll be a community open house. Do we have a location yet?
We were hoping for the library, but I haven't got confirmation on that yet.
Okay.
So location and time to be confirmed. As an open house, the way that it would occur is just people walking in and walking around looking at phone boards and interacting with staff, council members if you're there, and so on. So you'll have sort of a rolling period of time where you can come in and check it out. Councilmember Rasmussen?
I'm sorry, what day was that again, January 12th?
January 12th.
Okay.
5 to 7 p.m. Location TBD, to be determined, hopefully the library.
Confirmed.
No, that's the TBDB. TBDBD. Yeah.
Good chance.
Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen, there you. Okay.
Only we would laugh at that joke. You know, that's great.
They're nice. I appreciate that. All right. Anything further? Okay. There's no further business this evening. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen. A second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.
Come back and have a good Christmas.